You're listening to Packers Talk Network. Packers Talk.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
Therapy. It's Chris and Dave, and Packers are 4-0, and Dave is on his way to the doctor.
I called today. It's November 30th.
Oh, baby.
Right after Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. So you'll be only renting that Thanksgiving dinner.
Yep, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. That's
it'll be washed away. So to speak. Now, you'll be getting that, of course, at an Ascension hospital, I would hope, anyway.
No, we don't have any of those here in St. Louis. So
don't. We just our
headquarters is here. Yeah. So
okay. I had mine at the local Ascension hospital, and the prep wasn't too bad.
Yeah, so, I heard about that. It went through the local news, or the newsletter that goes around. It was quite a test. It's quite no one we've ever seen anything like that before.
Well, you will become familiar with the product called Go Lightly, which I'm assuming when they named that, they must have laughed their asses off and high-fived, because it's anything but going lightly, my friend.
Well, now I wonder, can I go to Thanksgiving and just, eat whatever I want? Will that convert to fat, that soon? Or is it just, can I just have at it? These are things I should probably ask the doctor.
Well, what they will tell you is that you want to have a thorough prep. And if you have a lot in there, you don't, get cleaned out as well, and they can't see, and they might make you come back. And you don't want and you don't want that, my friend.
I don't want to come back. Well, unless the drugs. That's the question, is are the drugs. I hear the drugs are really, really good. Yeah.
I would like to get a colonoscopy every Friday night, because
That's what I've tried. Yeah. That's what I've heard Conan O'Brien joke about that. Someone sent me a Jim Gaffigan, which I haven't listened to yet. But yeah, this is happening. And it's thanks to the Packers. Actually, I should say that, everyone should thank me for this 4-0 start, because this is the way I look at the, from a big picture. And Pastor Kevin's going to have to forgive me for my theology for a second.
Okay.
But you know how we always say we can't have nice things? We say that a lot, right? And it's true.
Always.
We're Brewer fans, Bucks fans. Well, so the Packers, season started, and the universe knew what it was going to do and make us disappointed. And then I threw out there that if they go 4-0, I'll get my colonoscopy. And the universe said, I want Dave to take one up the wazoo, right? But so in order for it to happen, I need the Packers to go 4-0. And so I think there was a big conference, among universe people, and they decided, we're going to let the Packers go 4-0. And because it's more important for Dave not to avoid his colonoscopy than to have the Packers go 2-2. So they said, go ahead, let Taysom Hill fumble, and let's let Julio Jones get hurt. They went all that, and but then I think at the very end they said, why don't we let Aaron Rodgers tweak his knee at the very end of the game, just to, they can be 4-0, but let's put a little scare into him. And but other than that, I think the whole 4-0 is really because of me.
Well, I think it probably is too, but I think you're being smiled upon, because now you'll have a healthy colon, and if it's not so healthy, they'll do a little, clipping and get rid of those polyps, and you'll be glad that that happened, because you won't have colon cancer. So that's a good thing.
Well, that's a glass half full mentality. So, Well, maybe it is a win-win.
Take it from a guy that's had, eight polyps, so I've been
8 polyps. Oh yeah, that was in the newsletter.
So this was somebody actually told me that. They said, well, I know you didn't want to do this, but if you hadn't had it done, I had my first one when I was 40. Who knows what would have happened if you waited until 50 to have it done.
That's what I'm doing.
But we have an unfavorable family history. I think your family history, you're your Nordic stock. I think you're healthy as a great tree trunk. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll soon find out. Yeah. We'll soon find out. Well, what there was a football game. Did you watch the game yesterday, by the way?
Which game are we talking about? is this the Premier League, or are we talking about Major League Baseball postseason?
It was an odd game called football that apparently started at 8 o'clock at night, just like the old days.
I know. I was expecting Howard Cosell and Frank Gifford to rise from the dead to do the broadcast.
Well, it wasn't weird. It was late, and then there's no fans in the stadium. It kind of had that feeling of watching like a high school football game.
But it sounded to me like they had a lot of crowd noise, and it was amped up, and it made it just weird.
It is weird. It is. And we're 4-0 in this weird season. And maybe that's why, the universe is doing to us. They're giving us this absolutely electric season that either is going to be canceled because everyone's going to catch COVID, or two, it's going to feel so weird that everyone's going to say, yeah, they won, but that was 2020. That's not a real season. So I don't know which one we're getting, because on offense, these Packers look fantastic.
It is incredible. Yeah. I think. I can't remember 2011 specifically, other than getting tired in the second half of the games because they were just blowing them out so much. But I think this offense, because there's so much to look at, it seems more impressive because, guys going left, guys going right. Oh, they're up the middle at the same time. Oh, my God. Look at the orbit that they're doing back there. I mean, it's a lot more showy than it was when Rodgers was tearing people apart in 2011. It was a static formation, and you just had Jordy beating guys and Greg Jennings beating guys, and it seemed a lot less impressive to look at than this iteration of the Packer offense does, because there's just so much going on, and also there's a lot of guys that you didn't really expect to be contributors, but all of a sudden Big Bob Tonyan is catching three touchdowns. It's like, really? He's like leading the NFL in touchdown receptions among, tight ends. I mean, that's just crazy. He has as many touchdown receptions in this season as Jimmy Graham had in 32 games with the Packers.
Well, I heard
that's crazy.
Tonyan is leading the NFL in touchdown receptions. I think it's not just tight ends. I think it's of all receivers it might be tied with a bunch of guys, but it's crazy. But what frustrates me, though, is that, and of course we're dumb fans, right? Of course we have real jobs and we get paid for doing things. We have to use our brains, but of course we can't figure out football because we weren't players and we weren't coaches, and we should rely on people who did play football and got multiple concussions. Our opinions don't matter, but we've been saying forever on offense, boy, it'd be nice if they ran an offense where you use all facets of your offense. You throw short, intermediate, and deep. You throw it to running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers. You throw inside and outside the hash marks, right? I mean, and everything. Put it all together, and then you put some motion in when you do running plays. You don't see it all coming one direction, and you get a quarterback to buy into the program. Isn't this what the offense looks like? And that's why I think, I don't remember 2011 either, but it almost makes me feel like this offense is maybe my favorite offense to watch, because it looks like New England to me. Like, if we finally figured out at first down we're tossing off to a running back who's running for 8 yards, and now it's second and two, where it seemed like that was just brain surgery before that. We just couldn't figure out these guys weren't open, these plays seemed very difficult to figure out. It's like they're finally running the offense that we've been talking about year after year after year, and it's super exciting to see that happen now.
I think the thing that really makes it work, though, is Rodgers appears happy to hit the open man. He's not, dropping back and looking and, I don't want that guy. He's only 6 yards downfield. I don't want that guy either, because, it's that window is open, but it's not enough. And I think I'll run around for a little bit and then I'll throw it out of bounds.
Right.
I mean, he just seems to be getting the ball. And when there's a guy open, that guy is getting the ball. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean, Shep, had a catch on Monday night and should have got into the end zone, and he didn't. But still, he went to that guy.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is when it comes to old Shep, here you got Rodgers spending a a quote, a paragraph long quote about, you know, how a lot of people thought, you know, he was going to get cut, but he's worked hard and he's you know, he's gritty, he's gutty. We want him on this team. You know, all these like leadership kind of things that Aaron Rodgers, you know, just really hasn't been doing for a while. You know, it's been a lot more of the exasperated look and, you know, the hands up in the air and all this kind of bad body language stuff. But now the guy's out there going over to Big Bob Tonyan and counting on his fingers how many touchdowns, right, that Tonyan has. He's laughing. He's smiling. He's, you know, he's encouraging younger players, and he's throwing them the ball. He's giving them the chance. And it's like a different guy, and I really don't know why, if he just decided in the offseason that, you know, I've been looking at this film, and it's there. I mean, and I don't want to get hit, so I'll just get rid of the ball and, you know, 1.8 seconds, and we'll gain 6 yards, and it'll be second and four. You know, that's fine. Or maybe I'll get it to 33 or 30, and they'll take that 6-yard pass, and they'll make it into a 16-yard gain. It'll be first down.
Right.
And he seems to be very happy, very content to do that. I know I'm happy. When a guy throws up a 147 quarterback rating, that makes me a pretty happy fella. This has been really a pleasure to watch on offense.
There was a one play where I thought he threw the ball to Irvin like the second he got the ball in a shotgun. He just, boom, threw it out there. Irvin ran for, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 yards and then lined it up again. So whatever that play was called, whether he switched out of it or not, you know, who knows? But he's not, you're right, he's not scanning the field, running around. You know, he's not taking any sacks. We're not getting any turnovers. I saw a comment by him, which is true, is, you know, not only do we have no turnovers, I can't even remember any close turnovers. You know, there's no fumble that we recovered, or, you know, the guy dropped it right in his hands, or, you know, ball bounced around. It's like he's throwing, they're running, you know, what looks like a run to the right. He scrambles left and throws to a tight end who is wide open going to the left. And it's like they can run that play all day long. And then, oh, well, we got this other one now, a jet sweep, which is now freezing a safety, and Aaron Jones is running for 6 yards. It really is remarkable that, you know, the offense that they're running, but it's not like, oh my gosh, I would never thought such a thing. And I don't know how all the inner workings of it work, but, you know, the ability that, I don't know how good our tight ends are, but they're the tight ends we have, so you got to throw them the ball. Otherwise, you're going to have people triple cover Davante Adams, and that's our game plan, is trying to wedge the football into Adams when he's being triple covered. That's what it felt like last year and the last few years of McCarthy. I mean, so finally it's like we're playing creative offense. We're always a step ahead of the defense because we know what we're going to do, and they have to react to it. It's like it was just using all the tools in the toolbox. I felt like that's something that was very New England-like for years and years, and now we're finally doing it.
But it's also they're not getting penalized. I mean, they're not turning the ball over. They're not getting penalized. They've got so much activity, so much motion going on, but everyone seems to know what they're doing. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, people being in the wrong place. I mean, how many times did in the past, you know, we saw Rodgers throw someplace and, you know, the receiver wasn't where Rodgers thought he was going to be. There just seems to be a lot more coordination. And maybe it's a factor of, you know, being in the offense for a second year. But I think a big part of it is just the quarterback, for whatever reason, you know, is it because they drafted Jordan Love? Is it because Rodgers sees his clock ticking? Is it because, you know, he's a single man again? I don't know. Maybe it's all of those things that has made him a different guy. I mean, the way he plays is different. He never wanted to be a, you know, check down Charlie. Like, he didn't want that. But now, it's not necessarily, you know, just check down, but he's more than happy to take what the defense gives him. And that's just not been his thing in the past. Only sacked one time in this game. What is it, 3 times all season? You know, it's remarkable that the guy's been pretty much untouchable, and you have an offensive line that keeps on shifting. You have receivers. You know, your top two guys are out, and you still manage to throw for 327 yards.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's not what I expected.
And I was looking forward to it, too. Knowing Lazard was out, I wasn't happy he was out, and I wasn't happy Adams wasn't playing. But I kind of thought, now, this is a really good test. Is it the system? You know, I know Rodgers is good. So Rodgers plus LaFleur system, is that good enough to be able to have MVS and Williams and Jones and Tanya? You know, can you make it work? And it does work. I mean, even if you look at the drives, there was rarely a drive that they got stopped. Again, it wasn't like they had a couple of great drives, and almost every drive is competitive and they're moving down the field, you know, at least until the end of the game. It's a very efficient offense. It's every play seems to be a little bit different. I mean, they had one play where this guy came looping all the way around, like he was running around the parking lot, yeah, coming back to the line of scrimmage. Is that legal? Yeah. I didn't know.
I remember watching Canadian football, and they used to do that. And I thought, well, I guess the NFL doesn't do it because it's not legal. Well, you know, here the Packers are doing exactly that. That orbit thing is what they, you know, call it. It's some sort of orbit motion, you know.
Yeah.
Which to me, it sounds like you have to go to physics class to learn about that. But whatever it is, they do it now, and apparently it's okay. And it creates another kind of deceptive look. How many times have you seen with their zone blocking scheme? You know, the entire line will kind of, you know, block and shift zone either left or right. And Jones especially will just work right off the backside of that. And, you know, he goes up the middle for 8 yards. This is remarkable what they're able to accomplish with deceptions. You know, so many guys going different places and they wind up running the ball because defenders had to be out of position in order to track the guys who were in motion. It's very ingenious. It's very clever. And the offensive players, you know, seem to, everyone, top to bottom, even guys you haven't heard much of, seem to really understand it. I mean, Malik Taylor wasn't a problem. You know, Darius Shepherd comes out there. You don't get this sense of a guy who was, you know, overmatched or didn't know what he was doing or that's the weak spot. No, they were able to do just fine. And they've also emphasized something that they're going to have to make a decision about in the offseason. But Jamal Williams, you know, led the team in receptions, you know, and including one where he had to high point it downfield. Now, he's not the athlete, I don't think, that Jones is. But, you know, he does all the stuff that Jones does. He can run with the ball. He can catch it out of the backfield. He's a multi-talented guy. He's a great blocker. I mean, both of those guys have turned out to be good blockers, but especially Williams. Yeah. That's what makes this thing go, is that you don't need to have, you know, four or five wide receivers when you have two running backs that effectively are wide receivers.
Yeah, you kind of work inside out. You know, which is so different than last year where it was like, you know, it was wide receiver, you know, dominant. Where here, you know, you're throwing to your backs, and then, you know, that opens things for the tight end, and then you know, catch them on a deep ball. And, you know, if they either catch it or you can get a holding call because they're out of position, they got to grab the guy. It's great. It really is. It feels like it's the offense I was waiting for. And maybe the offense in 11 was just as good and looked creative at the time. But it felt like, you know, that was because we had five guys on the cover, Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
And they would just do all their magic down the field. We couldn't see that because they would just, you know, beat people off the ball and get open. And that was pretty easy. But this looks like it's like a symphony. It's like, you know, it's all sort of like it all is coming together, and out pops an open guy and you hit him just right. And, you know, how easy was that? And it's great. I really enjoy watching it. I think everyone who's a Packer fan must be just super psyched about the offense. I do have a pet peeve about the defense, which I thought I could start with after the break, because I wanted to break down the first half a little bit. There's some interesting things that went on. You want to just go through that real quick, and then we'll hit our break, and I'll give you my second pet peeve. How's that sound?
All right. Well, let's do that, and then we'll break, and then we can get Dave's peeves on either side of the break.
On the other side. Actually, my first pet peeve, my second common sense thing that I think should happen. The first one being on offense, they're doing what I think is common sense. The second on defense, they're not, but we'll get back to that. So the game starts off. We get a 3-and-out right away. And I wanted to ask you about Darnell Savage. He had a breakup on that third down, which it was a pretty good play. And he thought he got banged up then a little bit later because, of course, you know, we can't have nice things, and that's natural for that to happen. But he came back. What do you think about his play? I think in one of the earlier podcasts, I thought our safeties were really weak. What do you think about the play of Savage? And then I suppose we should talk about Amos as well.
Amos with an absolute great play in the end zone defending that pass, which should have been a touchdown in the guy's hands, but Amos knocked it out.
Yeah. What do you think of our safeties right now?
I would think they are – I like my safeties to be playmakers. When I think of, you know, safety play, I'm thinking of Leroy Butler. I'm, you know, thinking of Nick Collins and, you know, from his, like, third year on. You know, it took him a little while to find his groove, you know. And those guys were difference makers. They were guys that could blitz. They were guys that could play coverage. They ball hawked. I mean, that, you know, that's what I think of as kind of the gold standard. And I know that's unfair probably because Leroy Butler is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. Nick Collins might have been had he not sustained that neck injury. So maybe that's an unfair comparison. But what they have right now, I think, is solid. Not great, but good enough. It's solid. Now, there's other guys, too, that play safety for them. Raven Green, you know, once in a while will, you know, make a play for them. Redmond will, you know, come in and he'll make a play for him every once in a while, too. So they've got a little bit of depth. They do enough, I think. But I think Savage, he's only in his second season. I think he's going to be better. I think he could be a weapon and a difference maker. But right now, he's not just a guy. He's better than that. But he's not what I would call a field tilter.
No, I guess that, and he was a first round pick. He is starting and he's played since the beginning. And I guess that's good. I think you're right. I think he's effective enough. The defense has some playmakers, you know, he's not a complete liability. I mean, there are years where they're getting safeties off the street, like before the week of the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's better than that. And I think you're right though. You know, we probably need this year and then maybe a third year to see what his upside totally is. But I thought that was, you know, a big play for him. And, you know, he's certainly fast. So, you know, I have hope that maybe he can be a safety for the long run that can be, you know, be a good player. But three and out right away, I thought, you know, this is good. We only need a few stops a game, as I've mentioned before. And the Packers go right down and score a touchdown. We talked about the orbit play, the misdirection. There was one run that Aaron Jones kind of ran up the middle, but by doing the jet sweep to Irvin, it showed like two of the linebackers like either frozen or leaning opposite to the way that Jones was running. And it makes me think like, yeah, that movement, why isn't that been part of the offense for years? It just seems it works so effectively. And it's just a joy to see it happen.
You know, the thing about the jet sweep, they ran so much of it in the first week, five times maybe, where they were handing the ball off to not just Irvin. I mean, there were.
Yeah, Lazard got one.
There were several guys. And I think maybe even Adams might have even got one.
Yeah.
So they used it. But I don't know that they faked it since then, the last three games. I don't know that they've actually run that play again. And I have a feeling that they wanted to put that on film to plant it in the minds of teams. So they got to prepare for it. They got to be ready for it. And they haven't really used it since that time, but the threat's there. So when they show that motion, the defense has to respect it and guys get out of position and that winds up just being a decoy. But it doesn't work effectively unless they emphasize it in that first game. And now they don't have to run it because it does its purpose by having guys react to it before the snap. And that sets up something else entirely. Now, just when teams are saying, look, yeah, okay, they ran it in the first game, they haven't done it since, that's when they will run it again. You know, it's just they'll wait until, you know, teams start to think that they're not going to do that, and then they'll work it in. And that is something I really give a lot of credit to the coaching staff because they were very effective with that in the first game. And it would have been really tempting to come back in the second and third game and run that thing frequently because it was so successful. But it would have been less successful, I think, because teams would have been ready for it. So they faked it instead, and they got the desired result, and that was faking the other team out and making them respond pre-snap. So I I like that play, not just for its effectiveness, but for what it makes other teams have to prepare for.
Well, I wonder if they intentionally, you know, ran these as fakes because they're misdirecting from previous plays, or is the team they're playing against, you know, if you've got slow outside linebackers, like run the jet sweep. If you've got weak interior linemen, then we're going to give the ball to Aaron Jones, but we're going to still run it because we want to freeze the safety or linebacker, what have you. So it's really when it happens, you know, you might see it a bunch on a different team, and we won't know why, because I don't know the teams well enough to know that their defensive ends are less, you know, effective than, you know, on other teams. So, but yeah, I think you're right. It's by showing it by, and it's true. And, you know, we talk about with Rodgers throwing the ball to Irvin and Shepard and throwing, like, all these things now are in play. Like, now someone's got to legitimately cover Tanyan next week, which, so what are you going to do with Lazard and Adams when they're back? You know, you're going to leave Tanyan open. You might have last year, because even if he was open, you know, they didn't throw the ball to him. Well, now all of that is on tape, and they have to respect it, and it just makes the offense that much better. But I did want to ask you, we've probably talked about this before, it feels like when they talk about the scripted plays, you know, the first few, that they're really creative. Like, that's when you saw that orbit thing, and every play seems to be some kind of master movement and some kind of interesting play. Why does the scripted play stop? Why can't they have I guess maybe I don't understand the scripted play idea, because I get that, you know, the game plays out differently and you have different downs in situation, things like that. But that's true in the beginning of the game too. You know, it just seems like they're really creative at the beginning, and then it settles into the more normal. I wish you could kind of see more, like the whole thing would be scripted. Does that make sense at all?
I know what you're saying. I think though they can't script too far, because you don't know what the game, you know, circumstance is going to show you at that point. I think the purpose of the script is more to make sure we show them certain things that we can build on later. And I'm not sure that they're building the script because, yeah, this is how we're going to score a touchdown. I think they'd like to if they could, but I think more than anything else, they want to use that as a way of setting up things later in the game. That would be my guess.
And I guess I understand that. We run this play, we want to see what this safety does. You know, how are they going to defend it? But then why does the defense say, all right, now that we've seen that, now when they do it again, let's not do that? Like, so the whole idea of the purpose of a scripted play, like, either I don't think the whole thing is just kind of hogwash, or they should script everything. But I get, like, they're not going to script it like, all right, we're going to run, he's going to get 5 yards. Then we're going to throw, and we're going to get 10 yards. Like, I know they don't script it like that. I know why they're doing it, but it seems like we always talk about it. They script the first 10 or 12 plays. I thought that was like a big thing when Holmgren came into
his head coach. I think 15 for Holmgren anyway. Yeah, I think it was 15.
They always talk about those, you know, scripted plays, things like that. But, you know, why not? Do they script the first part of the second half? Do they? I don't know. It just feels like it's more creative at the beginning of the game, and then it kind of settles into more of the routine. Even though they are more creative than they have in the past. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there and see what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I just think that there's a variety of goals that they're trying to accomplish with those scripted plays. There's probably things that they've seen on film during the week. They want to kind of test them for real, see how they work, you know, in the actual game situation. I think they're also trying to plant seeds. Sometimes I think for deception purposes, they would like them to think, so this is what they're going to do today. And actually it's not, but they want to be able to provide some sense of deception, you know, by making sure they run things that will get the other guys thinking falsely, you know, the false flag operation, Dave, that sort of thing. So I think there are reasons beyond just, yep, if we do these plays in this order, we're going to be able to go on the field and score. I think there's more to it than that.
That would be a great question to ask a coach, like to walk us through exactly the point. That's, again, if I had the power of invisibility, you know, that is one thing I would do, is I would spend a week up in Green Bay and listen to all their planning and, you know, what they're going to do. I would love that to see and so then to watch the playoff. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Now, these guys work crazy. I mean, they're, you know, they come in, you know, before 6 o'clock in the morning. They stay till 11 o'clock at night. They're never home. And they have these interminable meetings that go on, meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting. And I would think, though, if you can, if you have the stamina, if you can endure that, I think it would be fascinating to hear how they see the opponent and what they're trying to accomplish and why they choose a certain subset of their playbook to run that week. As they look at an opponent, how do they break it down and why do they choose the plays they do and how do they plan to deploy those in the actual game? I mean, there's a lot of considerations, but it must be fascinating.
It must. Well, I mean, if they're spent, we just did 3 days of marathon sessions. We've got it. Oh, Lazard's hurt. Like, so all right, rip it all up and start over. I wonder how that works. Or is it more of, you know, this is what Atlanta's got on defense. So, you know, let's start with broad, you know, we're going to run more than pass, or, and then we're going to attack this guy in particular. And then maybe then it becomes more and more specific as the week goes on. I'd be fascinated to kind of see how that works.
I would bet that they knew that Lazard was not going to be available probably from the morning after the game. And they, you know, and they just didn't say anything because this is one thing a lot of coaches have in common. And this may be the one area of overlap between LaFleur and McCarthy. They don't say the classic, you know, they wouldn't say shit if they had a mouthful. I mean, they just don't. And everyone thought that doctor's news conference on Saturday in front of Walter Reed was full of deception. I mean, that guy could work in the NFL because that's the whole thing. Every team does that. They just don't tell you what's going on. They don't want anything to leak out unnecessarily. And so maybe it's too strong to say they lie, but they shape the truth and they hold information back until it's strategically they have to. And I think that it was the case with Lazard. I think that they knew long before we knew what was going on with this guy. And they were just trying to keep it as quiet as long as possible so that the people in the Atlanta planning room who maybe saw, oh, my God, Lazard had 150 yards receiving, we have to plan for this guy. And then they found out, oh, no, he's not going to play. And they probably said, well, oh, they're going to play Adams for sure. So we have to plan for Adams. And then they didn't do that either.
Yeah.
You know, so I would guess that, you know, there's a strategy in how you allow that information to be known. It's like war planning, you know, where you purposely have disinformation. I think there's a lot of that in the NFL. It's a paranoid league, but there's a lot at stake. There's a lot of money riding for all these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with all that. It would just be really great to be an insider to hear some of that.
Yeah.
Well, then the Packers defense get another 3-and-out. And at that point, I thought Atlanta is giving up on their season. Like, this is, you know, even as bad, 0-3, you know, they still have an offense that's decent. Again, another 3-and-out. And I thought, you know, this is going to be a boat race. And it almost was. I mean, Green Bay got the ball in the next drive, drove it down the field and got to the 1-yard line, didn't score for two reasons. One, Shepard was not able to turn his body into, you know, the end zone, which, you know, you say these guys are interchangeable. They're really not. Like, an accomplished wide receiver probably gets a touchdown on that, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think the whole problem was not him turning his body. He didn't run his route deep enough. I mean, if he runs it just a little bit deeper, he makes it into the end zone, and he didn't do that. And I think that's inexperience.
Yeah, I get, you know, but how often do you see even like there, you catch it as you're going to the ground, they kind of, you know, hold the ball out, bring it back in. Like, that's a receiver with confidence that he's not worried about catch it, hold it, you know, and he's short. And then on the fourth down play, I love it that they went for it, but man, I still would like to see A.J. Dillon get the ball in that situation. I think I might be wrong, and the first time they do it, I go, oh, that's why he's can't see the hole very well, or, you know, he fumbled, and what was I thinking? But at least they gave it to Jamal Williams. You know, he's kind of your banger. I thought that was the right thing, but, you know, that just didn't work, and that is a concern that they need to be able to punch the ball on a fourth and one from anywhere on the field, whether it's on, you know, end zone or, you know, if they're going to do fourth downs, they got to figure out a good effective play, and I'm on green type of a,
exactly.
a play that gets you that first down. So, you know, we're still up 7-0, and then Atlanta goes on a 20-play drive.
20 plays. That's incredible. That was remarkable, that drive.
And it was crazy. It had four third downs, three fourth downs, and, you know, they kept going for it, and I felt like, you know, this is kind of the game here. If they can keep it competitive and get 7-7, then, you know, this is the game. And then they had to settle for a field goal. And I don't think that the game turned on that. I'm sure it was a real momentum buster. But how did you feel that way? I mean, 20 plays, I didn't feel great about my defense. They held them to a field goal, which is great. But after 20 plays, you'd think you get more than 3 points.
Well, yeah, it was concerning because they weren't able to get off the field. And like you said, they had all those third downs and a couple of fourth downs. But if you look at it, I mean, you know, gain 8, gain 4, gain 8, gain 2, gain 5, 13, 14, 6, 1. I mean, the biggest play they had on the whole drive was 19 yards. It wasn't like they were just ripping open, you know, gashing them. So they were getting, you know, little bits here and there. Packers couldn't get off the field on third down. That was a problem. But I got to say, I viewed it as a win to hold them to a field goal. Because can you imagine how demoralizing that is on a 20-play drive to control, was it 10 minutes a clock? I think it was. I don't have it right here in front of me. But I think they had it for like 10 minutes. And to settle for a field goal?
Ten and a half minutes, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, how demoralizing is that to be able to control the ball to that extent and come away with a damn field goal? I really thought that was a win.
Well, and then especially Green Bay gets the ball, goes down and scores. And, you know, I was kind of looking at what were the big plays. There weren't any that really jumped out. I did feel like, you know, when he threw the ball to Swervin or Irvin, I felt like this is good. The more that you're throwing to different guys,
yep,
the more they're in the game when it matters down the road. You know, it's not their first catch of the game. You know, there was I think I mentioned before, just kind of a short swing pass to Jamal Williams in there that he went for easy first down. It's like, take those all day long if they're going to give it to you. The one disappointment, I guess there were two in that drive of the touchdown. Mason Crosby missed the extra point, which, you know, I don't know if we need to really dwell on that. But
okay, now I'm glad you mentioned that because you don't live up here, and I live 90 miles away from Lambeau Field, and I was out for my daily walk, before the game, and it was really windy around here. You know, it was I want to say the wind was probably 15 miles an hour. Which is, on a sustained basis, going into the north end zone. Now, the wind was coming out of the north on that day. And, you know, when it gets inside the bowl, it swirls around. If you noticed, going south, the wind was not a problem. But going into the north end zone, the other guy missed an extra point, too. And the wind was really problematic. In fact, even when Mason made one, he was kicking it way far to the right. Because what happened is the ball got blown way to the left, and so he's trying to compensate for it. So I'm going to give him a pass on that one because the wind conditions were really bad in east central Wisconsin.
Fair enough. The other play that I think is something to bear watching, for the rest of the season is there was a really good throw to MVS and a back shoulder play in the end zone.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And MVS couldn't handle it and.
Jordy Nelson just threw up on his shoes when he saw that. I mean, it's like, dude.
Devontae Adams, gobbles those up in his sleep. I mean, good receivers, would love that pass. You know, they're open the second the ball gets there if you do it right. He's got one hand there. I just feel like, this is a concern even for the offense that we have. At some point, he's going to have to come through, and I think the dude is going to let us down. I'm just waiting for this to happen. And, he had early in the drive, he had a great catch for on a third down that Rodgers put right into his gut. He backed up into a first down. So I think he's got some upside. There's no question.
Oh, yeah.
But I think his floor is low. And I feel like
that's not his game. You know, I mean, his game is, you know, get the ball in space and run. It's blow the top off the defense. They were asking him to do something that I don't know that he has the skills. You mentioned Davante Adams. I mentioned Jordy. Those guys have incredible body control. And I'm not sure that MVS has that. I don't think a lot of receivers do that are able to, you know, basically stop themselves, twist around, and make that catch. I think a lot of guys wind up looking like MVS because they were asking him to do something that I don't think is in his portfolio of tricks.
I suppose. I don't know why. He's a professional wide receiver.
But you know, I don't know that everybody can, you know, do certain things. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Greg Jennings could have made that catch, but Greg Jennings probably couldn't outrun MVS. I mean, everyone's got different skills and talents. Do we have to talk about the Bible here? You know, there's not everyone can be a hand, not everyone can be a foot. I mean, come on, Dave. You know,
yeah, body, yeah, it all.
Yeah,
yes, I understand.
That's right. I'll get Kevin, and Kevin will tell you all about it.
No, yeah, I'm familiar with the body analogy. Okay. I do. Right. That the Packers score a touchdown. Tanya gets his first touchdown, which is it's great to see. Is a good play there. Then when Atlanta gets the ball back, they had three plays, but call a timeout. I guess it would have been on. When was – oh, no, I'm sorry. So Atlanta goes 3-0. I think the Packers get the ball. They get to a fourth down, and Atlanta calls a timeout. I think that's what happened. It was a 4th-and-2, and Rodgers makes a great throw and play to Malik Taylor, another name that came, which led to a second touchdown to Tanyan. So now we're up 20-3. It basically ends the half. And at that point, I'm feeling really good about – just about everything, and thinking Atlanta's going to probably lay down and die in the second half. But, you know, great offense. And really, you know, the offense, the defense gave up 3 points. You have to really give it up to the defense, even with that 20-play drive that they had. It's a really good defensive effort.
You know, I really want to thank the Atlanta Falcons for calling all those timeouts to allow the Packers to, you know, move 60 yards and get that late touchdown. That was extremely gratifying, and I want to thank them for being able to do that to help the Packers get out to that 20-3 lead. Dan Quinn, he hasn't been fired yet, but I would imagine that the leash is getting pretty short. I mean, I saw Bill O'Brien got capped this week, and that's a guy that's won 4 division titles, and he's finished. I guess it's not Atlanta's style because of their owner's not the kind of guy that fires in the middle of the season, but I think this is a team that is not living up to expectations. I think is probably the kindest way to say that.
Yeah,
and I, you know,
the guy had a Super Bowl one too, right? Well, I mean, they all had it, and wonder if that just right at that point there they should have just cleaned house because
I heard somebody say it. I forget which person it was. I don't know if it was Ryan Wood or who was being interviewed, but they pointed back to being up 28-3 in the Super Bowl and giving that back and losing. And, it, you know, how do you recover from that with, you know, the same guys? That's a big ask. It's a little bit like what happened to the Packers in, you know, 2014 in the Seattle game, right? You know, it's really tough to flush that from the system. Now, granted, 2 years later, the Packers were back in the NFC Championship game. But, you know, they were not the same after that incident. And I'm thinking that Atlanta had their moment in the Super Bowl where it's going to take kind of a changeover of not just the coaching staff, but probably the players that were around. Yeah, right.
That's
exactly
right. Yeah, because this drive is worth just going back. I forgot about it. So the Packers, because of a good return, got the ball basically at the 50.
Yeah.
They do a run for 5 yards. So it's 2nd-and-5. They call a timeout. Then the Packers move the ball, get a couple first downs. But then they get to a 3rd-and-15 with a minute left, roughly about a minute left. And they call a timeout there. They're at the Atlanta 41, 3rd-and-15. I mean, it's not completely illogical to call a timeout at that point. It's a little bit long for a field goal. You say it was really windy. They get a chance to get the ball back. I wonder now if teams won't do that because they, you know, instead they went for it and had a 20-yard pass to Malik Taylor, which I guess who would have thought? And then they end up in the next play getting a touchdown to Tanyan. So, I mean, it was helpful. I don't know if it was stupid, but it was it certainly was very, very helpful.
Yeah, I thought the it's not really strategy, the way that this coaching staff or this head coach thinks about third down and fourth down is nice. I mean, somebody woke up and said, you know, we don't have to punt on fourth down. We actually get four downs to make a first down. And, you know, I think we're going to take advantage of that. I mean, it seems to be happening a lot in the NFL now where you see teams that, you know, a situation where they normally wouldn't go for it, they do because they say, well, you know, our chances of making 3 yards when we're on the, you know, on their 40-yard line, we could punt it. We're going to gain, you know, 20 yards, maybe 25 yards. Or, you know, we have the chance of keeping the ball. And I really like the approach that LaFleur has. He seems to view it as not just, you know, a three-down possession and punt, but rather we have four downs here to work with. And that, you know, that shapes your opinion of what you do on third down. If you're thinking that I'm on the 41, I'm going to try a pass because if it's not complete, hell, we might as well go for it again on fourth down. You know, it shapes your third down play call when you are thinking that you have a fourth down to play.
For sure. And if you're right more than 50% of the time, I think you're going to score more points than not. I just think the convention is to always, you know, punt on fourth down, don't take the risk. I think if the risk is taken, and I guess stats prove it out, you're going to come out in the long run. You will have a couple of decisions that will look really bad.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe there's a game, yep. You know, it's like pulling the goalie. You know, stats say you should pull the goalie at the end of a game much sooner than you do, but the convention doesn't let you do it. You know, you don't want to be conventionally different and be wrong. So it was great. You know, the Packers up 23. That hits halftime, and we could probably take a break now.
I think that would be a good idea to take a break. You know, there's a bit of sadness in my life, Dave. I want to be honest with you and people that have listened to us, some for many, many years. There were no gifts were made to us this week, you know, via PayPal. And it was a great sadness for me. I waited all week long to get word of, you know, people going to PayPal, you know, PackersTherapy@yahoo.com and, you know, just chipping in a few bucks. You know what I did today? FanGraphs. You know, I play fantasy baseball, and I use FanGraphs, and I enjoy FanGraphs because it gives me information, and then occasionally entertainment. But I gave them $25 because they asked me today. You know, in order to keep this site available, you know, we rely on those that use the site. And I said, you know, you're damn right. So I gave them $25 today. And you know how I did it, Dave? I used PayPal.
Oh, no way. You can do that?
I did. I gave them 25 American dollars. Well, actually, it was just digital. I have no idea. You know, this is – the money system is just so stupid. I mean, it's like a number in an account. It's not real. But anyway, but the point is that 25 digits in my account went away to the FanGraphs account via PayPal. And that might be a nice amount for some people out there listening to Packers Therapy who enjoy this programming. And if you're one of those people – and I don't want to say I like to use the word deadbeat because I think that's an unfortunate word. Yeah. But if you've been stealing this podcast for years and not paying for it, now's a chance to get right with God. And, you know, go to PayPal, hit Chris and Dave with a couple of bucks. Share with us because we share with you weekly during the football season.
More than we probably should, but we do.
Well, and as a matter of fact, I think we're going to post on social media the photos of Dave's colonoscopy. You know, they take pictures of those.
Can you take them home?
See, here's the polyp. I want you to be able to see that. And don't worry, we clipped it out, you know. So, yeah.
They're looking at it close to say, does that say 4-0 on that polyp?
All right, we're going to take a break. Give everyone a chance to pause the podcast so they can go to PayPal and throw us a few bucks. And we're going to be back to talk more about the Packers' 30-16 victory over the Falcons to go 4-0 into the bye week. More Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave coming right up. Chris and Dave back with more Packers Therapy. We're working our way through the game, the victory over the Falcons, 30-16. We talked about the first half, Dave, but I understand they did play a second half. I kind of half thought that at 20-3, the Falcons would just, you know, wave the white flag, they topple their king, and just, you know, concede the victory and get back on the plane to Atlanta. But no, it turned out that they came out and decided to play a second half, and the Packers got the ball to start the second half. And I don't know about you, but I just assumed the Packers were going to go down the field and double up, and it didn't work out that way.
No, not only did they not score any points, it was probably their worst drive of the game until the very end of the game. But did you notice there was a lost play in there somewhere?
What do you mean a lost play?
So it was a first down and then the second down, and we're heading to third down, and all of a sudden it's first down again. And I don't think ESPN picked up on it. I was watching, I was doing the Cheesehead TV live stream thing again. Yeah.
Right.
And they mentioned it too. No one could figure out, like, was there a penalty? Was there, so in that, I guess I could look it up in the drive chart. I didn't see it here, but there is a first down. It was third and six. There is a pass, short pass to MVS that got a first down. And yes. That was never on the broadcast.
It was for 8 yards. Yep. And they picked up a first down, and then they started going backwards from that point.
And then they went backwards. So did I just miss it? And did everybody, we're all distracted that we're on Cheesehead TV. It just completely disappeared. Did you see it?
I did not notice anything out of the ordinary, but again, I wasn't, we had the sound down, you know, as we always do. My son and I were kind of providing our own commentary on the game. And so to be honest, I did not notice that. What I noticed instead was that, hey, MBS, you know, caught a possession pass and turned it into a first down. That's what got my attention.
Well, then you must have saw it. I didn't see it. I thought, well, that's weird. Where did that first everyone on the two, Aaron and Benke, we all lost it somehow.
It was during the no huddle sequence, and that was something else. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea because they haven't done it a lot. It was something they tried to do with McCarthy. I think it's good to try different things to keep other teams off balance and give them more to prepare for. But they didn't look terribly organized, and I thought their offense might have got out of rhythm when they were going no huddle and they had a crappy drive. And maybe I am asserting that based on the outcome, not about whether or not in real time it made sense. Initially, though, that first down came on a no huddle play. So things were kind of blending together. It seemed really disorganized, but maybe it was intended to be disorganized because they wanted to confuse the defense, and that maybe was a way to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we talked about this before, the idea that no huddle, you know, either not using it just as we're doing no huddle all the time or on this whole drive or never use it, but to use it once in a while is really effective. And they did that drive, and it turned into a punt. So there you go. But then Atlanta turned around and scored a touchdown, and I felt that you're right. Atlanta did not go into the halftime and come out giving up. It looked like they had some fight left. They must have had quite a locker room discussion. Scores a touchdown. Packers come back and score a touchdown themselves. Atlanta then scores again. So we get three straight touchdowns into the half. And I was going to ask you, after Atlanta scored their second touchdown, it was 27-16. At that point, were you nervous at all? Were you thinking this game is, like, were you starting to kind of envision your mind as we normally do the idea, all right, let's say we punt, they score, we punt, they go ahead. Like, did you sort of play that scenario out in your head?
My sphincter was tightening up, Dave, much as yours will be on the 30th of November. So, yes, it was uncomfortable. But this third quarter got off track, I think, because of that first possession. And I think had things gone differently in the fourth quarter, I think we would have looked at the way they stumbled out after the half. As having been the problem, but no, obviously we know that they recovered and it was all fine. But it looked to me like Atlanta was getting some rhythm going. I think they had three and outs in the first half, and you know that wasn't. I mean, they were a different team coming out in the second half, and I don't think it was because the Packer defense was worse. I mean, they had, you know, I think some injuries were beginning to to, you know, hurt them a little bit. But I just think Atlanta just played better than three.
Well, and so I guess this is a good time to just mention my pet peeve that I have, if that I think is common sense not followed, and I don't understand it. So the Packers are up 20-3 coming into the half. They're playing against a team that's down with an immobile quarterback. Falcons, the first time I got the ball, they get it on their own 33, and they have a relatively decent drive. It's 8 plays. Let's see. They got a lot of first downs on for, in fact, they rarely got any third downs that drive. So maybe that's not a great drive to pick this. But to me, if you have an offense that you feel pretty reliable that can score, you got Aaron Rodgers and the system's working and you're up by 2 scores. And as again, you have an immobile quarterback, I think you should be blitzing the heck out of that quarterback by either. And if you give up a big play, you give up a big play. But you do one of two things. Either you're going to get sacks and negative plays or hurried plays. You'll get turnovers off of that. Or at least you'll hit Ryan and hit him often. And just that alone, just the pounding that you take over time, I think takes its toll. The constant rushing 3 or 4 and putting back everyone in coverage, I don't understand that. I get it when it's close or if you're behind and – you know, but when you're ahead and you've got a comfortable lead, that gives you the permission to go after that quarterback. I mean, think of it in reverse. If the team is up on the Packers and they decide to blitz us like crazy, I would hate that, because that's when Rodgers gets hit. He gets that glassy eye on his face. He's not yelling at anybody. He just looks like he wants to just be home drinking scotch.
Or tequila,
whatever the day may be. I just don't understand why they didn't come out and, you know, they have, you know, when they have their healthy guys, they have the Smith brothers, they have Gary, and they'll have Kenny Clark or Kiki, whoever else. But I would say you're up 20-3. Those guys might be able to rush the quarterback, but Alexander, Raven Green, Darnell Savage, someone else should be coming from somewhere and should be putting heat on that quarterback and not letting him sit back there to throw. So what do you think about that?
Well, in fairness, I mean, Ryan was sacked 4 times in the game. I mean, I think Zadarius had 3 of those. Did Raven Green have the other? I forgot who got the 4th one.
Let me check it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, they weren't putting some heat on him, and his longest pass was only, you know, 21 yards. So I think they did a pretty good job. I think part of the problem might be in the second level. I mean, there was no Gary in this game. He was out. You're playing in the middle with a 7th round pick from a year ago in Summers and an undrafted free agent in Barnes. So you have a couple of linebackers who have promise. I think they can run a little bit, but I'm not exactly sure they're comfortable, you know, with some of the backside guys they had. I'm not sure in this drive if Savage was on the field. I know he was hurt for a time, but I don't know if he was on the field at that point. I mean, sometimes the players that you're able to put on the field are going to dictate what you're going to do with pass rush. And I didn't make a note of everyone who was on the field at that particular time. So there could have been a reason. As a fan, I mean, I love, like you said, I love it when my team blitzes. It's aggressive, you know, and I love it to see the sacks and all that kind of stuff. But if I was a defensive coordinator, I would have, of course, a broader view on things, and I'm going to be aware not just that I have Zadarius Smith and I got some guys that can rush the passer. I'm going to be aware of, ooh, my defensive backfield is, you know, not who I want. I mean, Kevin King went out at one point.
I get that. No, yeah. But you know what? Your defense backup isn't – I have to depend on whoever Kevin King's backup is. It's your offense. Like
Josh Jackson though is the backup. I mean, Josh Jackson, geez.
But you know, Josh Jackson, it should, if you have an effective pass rush, well, send Josh Jackson then. Like, don't put him in coverage. You know, I'd rather have him running after Matt Ryan than covering. Then I just think, look, it's okay if you give up the long play. Well, then guess what? You gave up the points. You get the ball back. You expect your offense to move the ball and score. Your defense is getting tired. Their defense is getting tired because now they're back on the field again. I just think there is very little downside. And there could be a game where, you know, they get back into it that much quicker. You get 2 bombs, and all of a sudden now it's a close game again. You're like, why did that happen? But you have to live with some risk. And playing rushing four and playing zone is just in, you're hoping that you can get it down. You're basically racing against the clock to get it to the end. But as it was, I mean, the Packers should have had this comfortably as a win, and it took Amos knocking a ball out of the guy's hands at the end to kind of seal the deal. It was, it shouldn't have been that close. And if it's Mahomes, I get it, because if you rush him and you miss him, then you really pay. But yeah, Ryan's not going. So I felt like that was a really lost opportunity to just go gangbusters against.
I'll tell you what we were, you know, thinking. And again, I'm watching the game with a guy who was a, you know, nationally ranked chess player. And of course, in chess, competitive chess, the clock is really important. You know, sometimes you wind up winning because your opponent gets in time trouble. And, you know, my son was saying, hey, this is a good thing. They're using a lot of time, and the time is your friend on these kinds of things. I think especially in the fourth quarter, they were using a lot of time, and, you know, that was, you know, not sound strategy. So, you know, there is an advantage. If you know you have an offense that can pretty much score at will, and this offense through four games has scored more than the 2011 offense has scored. If you believe in that offense, you know, you're perfectly content to let, you know, when you have a 20-3 lead, to let the other guy march down the field, kill a lot of time, because you know when you get the ball back, you're probably going to score again, and that's going to, you know, bring you back to even, and then they're going to have to drive the ball again, use more time, and your offense is going to get on the field and probably score again. So I can definitely see, you know, where they're thinking about not just the thing that's in front of them, you know, blitz the passer. They're thinking about a lot of other factors, including what they can do when they get the ball on the other side. So, I really want to be fair in that at the moment, I wasn't thinking blitz. What I was thinking of is, you know, make these guys, if they're going to score, make it really hurt them to score. Or make them try to take chances and make a mistake. So either way, you're going to come out ahead. And that's the advantage of having a 20-0 lead and an offense that is going to be able to put up points.
Yeah, I guess disagree. I think, you know, you're up 20-3. I mean, how they played it, Atlanta got in eight plays in 4 minutes. They score a touchdown. They missed the extra point.
Yep.
But now it's, you know, 20-9, should have been 20-10. So, look, they could have, maybe if they had a blitz, maybe they would have gotten 2 minutes and it would have been 20-10. But, and you know, there's less time off the clock. But, you know, there's just as good a chance that you get a turnover because, or a sack or something. I wish we had the defense, just like the offense is playing the way I kind of wish it would. I wish the defense would be one of these defenses where they're lining up eight guys on the line. You don't know who's coming. And either they drop some guys off in coverage, or they send some, and it's just a big guessing game. But it feels like, you know, it's a very vanilla. Four guys are coming, very few blitzing, and Atlanta, who should have been dead at that point, you know, dinked and dunked on the field and scored scored 14 points. And
yeah, well, 13, because they missed the extra point. But but they also killed 12 minutes on the clock, which is good. I mean, because the clock at that point is your friend. And even with those 13 points, they were still 11 points behind.
No, but they could have scored 20 points. I mean, they had a guy with the ball in his hands in the end zone, and you know, they were an onside kick away from making it a really scary game. I think the Packers will be a really good team if the game plan is, the offense clicks, you get a stop, you get a two-possession lead, and then you go after, you know, their quarterback put a lot of pressure on. And then you let your playmakers get turnovers and things like that. I don't think we're good enough to play it straight. And
I think that's true. I would agree with you. I don't think that they are a great defense. And I also would agree, or you didn't say this, but I think this is where you were going, that I don't think Mike Pettine is going to be a long-termer, and I would not be surprised if they wind up going with a scheme that does have eight guys on the line, and you don't know if they're going to drop off or going to blitz or what they're going to do. I would not be surprised if they wind up going in that direction. But this is LaFleur's second year. You know, I mean, McCarthy changed defensive coordinators, you know, before they wound up winning the Super Bowl, and I think this might have the same kind of arc.
Yeah, I suppose that may be true. You know, Kansas City is a team that plays. I mean, they just won the Super Bowl, so surprise. You know, but they have very creative offense. You know, lots of guys are, they use their tight ends a lot, running backs, all that. When I watched them against in the earlier game, they'll put a ton of guys on the line of scrimmage, yep, and you don't know who's blitzing and who's not. And yep, I feel like that is really, really effective. But, you know, that must not be Pettine's thing. I will say, you know, basically the second half as it plays itself out, you know, I guess the only other interesting thing is Aaron Rodgers almost got hurt, like I mentioned before, which apparently isn't a problem. He was more embarrassed about it than hurt.
Hyperextended left knee, right?
That was Do you think that's, you know, his embarrassment? Is he just playing that down? Because I think that was another trying to do too much a situation. And I think his frustration is on the sidelines was like, you know, I almost blew it again. It's the same knee I hurt before. And, oh, this would just kill the whole thing. Like, I wonder if he, in his headspace that he talks about, is in a good place that spoke to him and said, you got to knock that off. That's the only thing that can sort of derail this year to being potentially something special is you trying to overextend a play and then, you know, a knee or whatever else is going to, you get injured and then it's over.
Yeah. You know, my guess is this, and this is more or less thinking about my situation. I mean, there are injuries that, you know, require physical therapy and rehab, and then it affects your play and you're not able to get out there. And then there are injuries that, that hurt, but it doesn't keep you from playing. You maybe even aren't really treating it. You know it's there, but it's going to kind of heal itself. And I think this was kind of one of those deals where, yeah, he tweaked it, but I don't think he damaged it and injured himself. Where he's going to need to have attention paid to it, or that's going to limit him in some way. As I recall, after he did that, didn't he scramble for a first down then after that?
Yeah, he got hit. Yeah. No, I guess his inner voice.
He got hit a couple of times, as I recall, when he was outside the pocket. Yeah. That bothered me at his age, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is a shame if the season go down, you know, for that reason. But anyway, so that happened, which was a little scary. But then, you know, Atlanta goes down. Amos makes a good play and knock it out, and that's basically the game.
Yep.
We win 30-16, and I guess, you know, it's a 4-0 start. It's really fantastic. We certainly are dealing with our fair share of injuries, just like everyone else is. And so, even in the fourth week, the bye week is coming at just the right time, just like they always say.
Well, on the downside of that, though, if the Packers have aspirations to play in the Super Bowl, and I think they probably do, I mean, then they're going to have, you know, what, you're going to have like 15 straight weeks. Well, if you wind up getting a first round bye, that's good. There will still be a first round bye. Is that right? Will the playoffs have a first round bye this year? I know that they changed some rules, right?
I don't know. If it's not the result of COVID, I wouldn't know either way. If they changed the playoff schedule, I'm not aware that they've taken away the bye.
Yeah, have they added another team or something where maybe it's only the first place team that gets the bye? I want to say there's going to be like, this may just be a weird dream that I had, but I thought they had gone to seven maybe playoff teams. The top seed gets the bye. The other six play, three survivors, and then you've got, you know, your next week, you've got four teams left.
Could be.
I don't know. Maybe I'm hallucinating that. But if they don't get the bye, you know, they will have to play, you know, consecutively the rest of the season, which is, 12 games. And then you got to go through the postseason. Now they'll have a bye week, I think, before the Super Bowl, won't they? I think they still have that. So it'll be a long time till they get another bye. So, yes, the bye is coming at a good time because it's going to allow you to get Kenny Clark back. It's going to allow you to get Adams back. Some of the guys that were dinged up, your boy, you know, Chan Sullivan, got his bell rung. He has a concussion. They get a chance to get him back. I mean, there's a number of guys that have been injured around the league. There's been a lot of injuries.
No, there really has been. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because of the weird training camp or maybe no practice games. I don't know, whatever it is, a lot of injuries. So maybe it does come at a good time, but the downside of it is that there's no more bye weeks, you know, the rest of the way in.
What do you think about, you know, as we get some of these injuries, I'm going to forget the guy that we signed from the Browns.
Kirksey.
Kirksey. Will he come back? Right. Is Camille Martin going to be someone that factors in there? Right. Or is Chris Barnes worked his way up to be a starter? I am super impressed by Chris Barnes, number 51. They're both in 51. Coverage. He hits hard. He looks, he looks like a really interesting player. Yeah. And apparently he was calling the defensive plays too.
Mm-hmm. So like, he went to UCLA. That's a good school, you know, undrafted. But I like him. I like everything you said about him. I definitely like him, but they were really high on Martin, in the, preseason. I mean, there was just glowing reports on this guy, and I think he might be available to come off after the bye week or maybe one more game. But so he's waiting in the wings. Kirksey also. I mean, you may see those two guys being your starting inside linebackers after the bye.
Yeah.
I guess a lot depends on the injury. But also Martin, being a rookie, has missed a lot of time. I'm not sure that they'll insert him back until they see what he can do. Because right now, I mean, Ty Summers, there's a lot of good and bad right now. I guess you'd call him a high variance player at this point. He oftentimes seems to be in position to make a play, but doesn't make it. And this is only his second game he's played from scrimmage. And so maybe I'm expecting too much from a seventh round draft choice. So it seems like he's got good speed. He seems like he's smart enough to play the position. He does make some plays. But there were, you know, a few times, you know, where, I mean, some of them are not necessarily his fault, but, you know, the week before against New Orleans, he's in position to make a play and he gets shrugged off by 41, you know, and 41's a hell of a player, but still, you know, Summers is there, but can't make the play. And it seems as though he's had a number of those things where in the practice games a year before, he's all over the field making those plays against guys who are now driving UPS trucks.
Yeah.
But when he's playing for real in these games, he gets there but can't necessarily finish. Now, that could be a function of being able to just get more reps, get on the field more, understand what it takes to complete those plays. So I'm not discouraged by him, but he's not. He has shown holes in his game at this point. Barnes, I don't know why the guy, you know, wasn't drafted. Maybe he didn't test well at the combine or whatever it was. But he seems like more of a complete finished player than Summers does. And I like him a lot. I'm just dying to see Martin because people were so high on this guy. I want to see, you know, what they liked about him.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if he comes on the scene as like a real, like you say, field tilter, you know, a really, really good player. You know, defense starts really pick up in the second half. It could be a really special season. I guess the big downer, we have a bunch of injuries that hopefully will come back. Kevin King, you mentioned some of the others, Sullivan with the concussion. Yep. But DeGuerra had a season ender.
Yeah. That was
really too bad.
Because they were really high on him too. And a little bit that we saw him, especially in that first game, I mean, the guy looked like he was a player out of the box. And when they drafted him, I think Cincinnati was his college. I thought, really? I mean, third round pick in this guy? And of course, I watched the YouTube stuff on him. And it's like, okay, I guess he doesn't suck in his highlight reel. I had very low expectations. And, you know, the one time that we actually saw him play, looked real encouraging, like, wow, hey, they found a guy that can play right away. And now that guy's not going to play the rest of the year. He's got an ACL and he's out for the year. I mean, hopefully he'll be able to play next year. A lot of guys come back from that injury now and can play. But also with him, it's not just the physical part. Being a younger player, he hasn't had a lot of the reps. And so in a lot of ways, he'll be kind of starting over again next year. So we'll see if that derails his career.
Yeah, I mean, now that Tanyan's burst on the scene a little bit, you know, we're not going to feel that as much. But he did. You know, he was kind of the tight end group. He looked like he might be a real difference maker in that group. But now it seems, you know, Sternberger's kind of got himself a little firmer footing. Certainly, Tanyan's is very good, and then the Lewis is going to come back. It's another injury that probably comes back after the break. Seems like they like to use him a lot in running situations and stuff too. So, but that's a real shame, you know, that we've lost. So now really our, unless Dylan plays, our top three draft picks are probably going to have no impact on this season. Might still be a great season, but, you know, I don't know. Yeah, maybe Dylan comes on.
The way I look at that, though, is that if you can be this good and without your top three guys, you know, one guy because he's just not ready to play, another guy because he's buried behind two better players, and a third guy to injury, but all of them, or at least the second and third rounders, have shown promise. I mean, that's really great that you've got those guys. They're your guys for at least the next three seasons. That, I think, is a good thing going forward because, you know, in the off season, they're not going to bring back both Williams and Jones. One of those guys is gone for sure, and maybe both. So it's good you have an A.J. Dillon in the garage, you know? Likewise, you've got a couple of tight ends now that you like that have some promise for the future, but it's really good to have somebody, you know, who will be coming back who showed some initial promise because you don't know what's going to happen to those two younger players. So it's really encouraging to me that you don't have to rely on your draft choices to show right away that you're good enough without them, because that just gives you more depth. And right now, I don't know about you, Dave, one of the stories for me this season is how much depth they seem to have on both sides of the ball.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're seeing some, like, Kingsley Keke play, you know, much better than before.
Yeah.
You know, looking at this Barnes, I would not have seen. Raven Green is, you know, I think he's been in their plans, but we haven't seen much of him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like, you know, but winning does that, right? Like, people all seem to be better when you're playing with a lead, and especially on defense, you can maybe take some chances or they don't seem as painful if you miss on it. It's like winning snowballs into more winning. It seems your injuries decline and rookies become a little bit better. This 4-0 start has really helped, the depth, right? And you're right. You turn on the other side, it looks like the depth is amazing because everyone's contributing. It's when you got a good system and Rodgers is playing well in it, it's like you could almost, it almost feels like you can line up anybody. But hopefully it's because they have good depth.
Yeah, you know, I think the depth is a part of it. And it does seem to be right now that they have a scheme of deception on offense that, you know, really does seem to be working for them. I mean, this is the first time, I think, did I read this right? The first time they've had four games to start the season where they've scored more than 30 points or 30 points or more. And we're talking about a, you know, franchise with over 100 years, you know. So this is pretty special the way that offense has come together. I think a lot of it is Rodgers buying into the system. I know that's a cliche, but he does seem to be taking what the defense gives him. I think there's something to be said for that. I think you've got two running backs that might be at the zenith of, you know, the peak of their skills. You have an offensive line that's been shifting, but, you know, pretty solid all the way across the board with good depth. You know, they've lost some guys and been able to plug other guys in. So, you know, I mean, you have enough receivers. I know it's been really popular on social media to say, you know, gee, imagine how good the offense would be if they would have drafted a receiver.
That's getting old.
But I mean, but the point is taken. You know, they're able to do this without having those receivers because they've been able to repurpose tight ends and running backs. And I think that goes to the guys who are drawing up the scheme and sitting in those meeting rooms that we want to be in. I'd love to hear them, you know, who's the guy that says, hey, you know, pass me a donut. And by the way, if we did this or that against these guys, oh yeah, really? Well, then we don't need the receivers if we do that. Yeah, great. You know, have some more coffee because we're working a 16-hour day, you know?
Yeah.
So there's just a lot right now, I think, to be encouraged about. I think the defense is not great, but I think it might be good enough given how good their offense is. And I don't. As long as Rodgers is willing to play this style, I'm not sure that they're going to have problems scoring points. And if they can score points, that makes your defense a hell of a lot better.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, the Packers win 30-16. It was a game that was mildly concerning, but pretty much in the bag almost immediately. And that's a pretty – or it was not a bad team, Atlanta, that long ago. I don't – their 0-4 record, I think they should have beat the Bears. I think they had, what, two colossal or three colossal giveaways.
They had,
so it's not
had,
like they're –
they had two collapses, yeah.
Not uncompetitive. But they certainly seem not to be in the class of where the Packers are. And it bodes really well for the Packers going into the break.
Yeah, and then after the bye week, they've got Tampa Bay waiting. Tampa appears to be a good team, although I got to tell you, when they wear those dark uniforms, I don't even know what color that is. It's like a shit-stained brown. It's just, it is just.
They've never been able to figure out those uniforms in Tampa Bay.
I mean, give it up and start again. You know, but don't go back to the fudgesicle ones either, or the dreamsicle ones. I mean, Jesus. So anyway, they have Tampa Bay coming up with Tom Brady through a pick six this past week. I think might be showing some cracks in the armor there, Tom. But they got them waiting on the backside. We'll be waiting on the backside to see how that game comes out against Tom. Terrific. But until that time, we're going to go into the break with a 4-0 record. Packers 30-16 winners over the Falcons. And we're going to be back to talk more about the shit-stained Browns team against the Packers after the bye week. But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that is Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.